You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with the Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas with a Hot Texas Swing Band and our friend Alex Dormont.
We are so delighted you're with us for episode 163. And we're so excited to join our guests that are already in the studio with us tonight. That I have a question for you.
Where, I have an answer?
Yes, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
We're in the Red Desert. In fact, we're in the Red Desert with all these sand dunes. They can't see anything with sand.
And who is joining us? It's the first Thursday of the month. So here is Henry C. Park coming on.
Howdy.
Hello, Henry. From Brooklyn. Oh. All right. And then our returning guest, we're so excited to have once again this year, Craig Johnson. Hello, Craig.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me. Live from U Cross, Wyoming, population 26.
There you go.
There's more than that on my block.
Yeah. I know. Probably more than that on your floor.
You know, where are you? About half an hour from Sheridan?
Yeah, about half hour from Sheridan, about 20 minutes away from Buffalo.
Well, I went to this book here. This is a 2018 version of Road Atlas from Rand McNally. And lo and behold, U Cross is on the map.
Wow, I'm impressed.
So,
must be a very large map.
Tallest town in the country that's on a map.
I wonder if the Longmire series could have anything to do with that, you think?
Well, we do euphemistically refer to this little portion of Wyoming as the UCLA area. It's U Cross, Claremont, Lager, and Arvada. And if you add all those little towns up here on the Powder River leading over to the Bighorn Mountains, there might be about 235 people, I think, in all of them put together.
Wow. Well, we are so delighted that you're all with us kicking off our final month for 2025. We are December 4th, and we are looking forward to a month of great rendezvous, but this is a wonderful way to kick off December and to begin to say farewell to 2025. So, Henry, let's see. Let me hold up Henry's book. So Henry is the author of The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and The People Who Made Them. And he joins us the first Thursday of every month. He's also the film editor for True West Magazine. And he knows everything there is to know about what is going on today with Western film and TV. Take it away, Henry.
Thank you. Well, at True West Magazine, I think we finished tweaking our annual January Best of the West issue. I interview Western filmmakers every chance I get, and this time everyone I asked said yes. The directors of Long Shadows, of Eastern Western, Alex Cox, the writer, director, and star of Dead Souls, Dallas Saunier, the producer, and Travis Mills, the director of Frontier Crucible. It's an embarrassment of riches for me because I can only use a little from each interview in the True West article. So I'm doing full interviews. So I'm doing full interviews of one every month in Henry's Western Roundup. My talk with Long Shadows director William Shockley is already up right now. And this weekend, I'll be posting my interview with the writer directors of Eastern Western, sisters Marina and Biliana Grozdanova. I know I harp on the idea that Westerns above all genres, should be seen on a big screen. So I'm thrilled that Eastern Western, which was shot in Montana, much of it in spectacular snow, is premiering in theaters in 15 cities tomorrow and a couple of theaters in Los Angeles tonight. I've got all the theaters listed on the Henry's Western Roundup Facebook page, so check there to find if there's a theater near you. Also opening in six cities is Frontier Crucible. That's also tomorrow, which was shot around Prescott, Arizona, and Monument Valley. And again, check the Roundup Facebook page to find the theater nearest you. And don't put off seeing them. In some cases, these movies are playing for days, but in a lot, it's one showing on one night. So don't miss out. Both are fine Westerns and very different. Eastern Western is very naturalistic and stars a very talented cast of non-actors. Frontier Crucible is a tough, it's tough in a Bud Bedeker, Randolph Scott way. Its leads are excellent newcomers, but its supporting cast includes William H. Macy, Thomas Jane, and Hammer. Both are beautifully photographed films. And also, starting tonight on Netflix, which began the year 2025 with the Western miniseries American Primeval, they're ending the year with a new Western 10-episode miniseries, The Abandons. I've only seen the trailer, it looks good, and it's unusual for a Western in that it's about a struggle for control of land between two women, played by Emmy winner Gillian Anderson and Emmy nominee Lena Headey. Of course, it should be remembered that Joan Crawford won an Oscar for Mildred Pierce, and Mercedes McCambridge won an Oscar for All the King's Men, and together, they still brought us Johnny Guitar. But let's hope for the best with The Abandons. Anyone seen Johnny Guitar?
No.
A long time ago.
Long time ago.
Yeah, well, of course, it's very campy and over the top with Joan and Mercedes playing rivals, battling each other over possession of Scott Brady, of all people, as the dancing kid because he's so suave on the dance floor. It's kind of a slow motion nightmare if you're straight or sober. Tim Blake Nelson is going to be starring in the new Western. Folks who only know him from his excellent but usually comic work in Coen Brothers' fine films like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And The Ballad of Buster Scruggs might not have caught his very dramatic performance in Old Henry, as Old Henry in the 2021 film of that title, but it's great stuff. And he'll soon be shooting Where the Sparrows Fly, playing a card shark on the run. It will be shooting in Gran Canaria, Spain, in the Canary Islands, where Take a Hard Ride with Lee Van Cleef, Jim Brown, and Fred Williamson was filmed. Mm-hmm. Now, we're all familiar with Taylor Sheridan, who is largely credited with a resurgence of interest in Westerns. His creations like Yellowstone, 1883, 1923, Lioness, Landman, and Tulsa King are the backbone of Paramount+. One startling bit of recent news is that following Paramount's acquisition by Skydance, Taylor Sheridan announced that he is leaving Paramount for a $1 billion deal with NBC. He has numerous series commitments with Paramount into 2028, but only Yellowstone Marshals, under whose banner the Bass Reeves miniseries sailed, seems to be likely to be a historical Western. And you can read all about this and so much more at henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Oh, Henry, we always love to hear about the latest news. Craig, do you have a question at all for Henry or a comment at all about what you just heard?
Oh, my goodness, no. Other than to be impressed by the encyclopedic aspect of his knowledge. Look at that. I think he's made a world life study of this. Look at, so I can sometimes remember some of the movies that I watch. Look at, and then there are an awful lot of other ones that just kind of go along the wayside.
Jim and I were remembering earlier today, Craig, when we saw you at the Western Writers of America conference. And you and A. Martinez sat together in a public, I mean, we got to all listen to a wonderful dialogue conversation between the two of you. And I think, Henry, you've interviewed A. Martinez, haven't you?
Yes, indeed, I have.
Yeah.
A charming individual like that. Whenever I get a chance to get him to come, to an event with me and be my wingman, I grab him and make him go.
Well, you know, that of course brings up a point that there's been a lot of recent rumblings about a possible revival of the Longmire TV series. Is something in the works?
We hear that almost all the time like that, but until I hear it, you know, from the proper channels, I really don't pay too much attention to it like that, because there's an awful lot of buzz and noise that comes out of a lot of those like podcasts and websites and everything that are all about Hollywood, that, you know, a lot of what they do is just to try and get you to click on them, clickbait, you know, and see, you know, if they can get you to get on their site, like getting boost their numbers and all that type of stuff, which is flattering, you know, because that means that, you know, Longmire is one of the leverages that they can use to get those to click like that. But until I hear something from Warner Brothers, until I hear something from our producers, or even our actors like that, I'm probably, you know, going to hold out and wait and see what happens.
Sure.
Well, you know, on screen, A. Martinez is just so, you know, terrifying.
He is. And he's then, got a very imposing quality.
Yeah. And then, you know, there
Which
he is in the hallway, you know,
the
talking.
The play those type of characters like it in Longmire, like that, you know, whether, you know, it was A or, you know, Zahn McLaren like that, you know, played a little bit of a rough character every once in a while, like that, you know, Graham Greene, like that was, you know, a really bad guy, you know, in the show, and, you know, a number of actors like that. And it was always funny like that, because whenever they would come up for Longmire Days, the festival that we have at Buffalo, here in Wyoming, you would see people walk up to them and they'd stick their hand out, but like really kind of carefully and go, hello, like that, you know, they were a little bit intimidated, a little afraid of him like that. But I've got a theory on that, you know, and Henry, I'd like to hear what you have to say about this, because this gets a little bit of psychological, you know, work here like that. So I think it's got something to do with it like that. But have you ever noticed like that? It seems to me like that a lot of the actors, you know, in the history of Hollywood that have played really, really horrible, bad characters were some of the nicest people that you could ever possibly want to meet. I remember reading an interview with, you know, Basil Rathbone like that, you know, and he was, I guess, you know, one of the most charming, approachable individuals on the face of the earth like that. But I've got a theory on that. My theory is that if you have an actor who really knows that they're not like that, they can just cut loose and they can just be as evil and as rotten and as horrible as they ever possibly can. The actors you have to worry about are the ones that will never play a bad person, because they have something inside them that they're trying to hide a little bit and don't trust, you know, themselves, you know, to be portrayed in that fashion. So I don't know. What do you think, Henry? Does that sound like some believability to that or what?
I think that's true. I think there are people who see themselves as leading men always are worried about, oh, will I be likable or not? Whereas people who really don't take themselves that seriously, but take acting seriously, have a lot more fun playing villains. I was lucky enough to interview guys like L.Q. Jones and Morgan Woodward. And, you know, Morg was the most frequent guest star on Gunsmoke. I think he was on 12 times, and 11 of them, he got killed by Matt Dillon. So, I mean,
you know, Matt must not have been as good a shot as we thought he was, huh? Like, you
know. Now, there was one episode where he traded roles with Earl Holliman. So he got the nice guy role, but it's more or less by accident. So he didn't get killed in that one. But actually, the great thing that he could do is he could go without blinking for like 10 minutes at a time, and it would just terrify the other actor he was playing scenes with. Because he didn't know what was going on, but something was terribly wrong.
I love that.
My gosh. Well, this is so much fun. We are going to just step away for a moment, though. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more with Craig about what's been going on since he was with us last year. But first, are you a writer? Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. And they have a unique special offer only available through tomorrow, Friday, December 5th. Promote your book on their Blue Bookshelf website, enhance your SEO, and broaden your audience. All this for 1 year for only $35. And now we're going to listen to another offer. Don't go away. We'll be chatting more with Henry and Craig when we come back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back. The writer. The book here. Don't confuse me here.
Don't wait to hold it up.
I've got my copy.
Stereo.
We're talking with Henry C. Park and obviously Craig Johnson, and we're going to be talking about this great book, Return to Sender. And I thought maybe I better read his bio real quick so we can get it in. Craig Johnson is the New York Times bestselling author of the Longmire Mysteries, the basis for the hit Netflix original series, Longmire. He's a two-time recipient of the Western Writers of America Spur Award for Fiction, Marble Will Writers Medallion Awards, and his novella Spirit of Steamboat was the first one-book Wyoming selection. Craig is a 2025 recipient of the Owen Wister Award for Lifetime Contributions to Western Literature. He lives in New Cross, Wyoming, population 26. There you go.
And we were there when you received the Owen Wister Award. It was so fabulous. What a great night that was.
It was fun. I had a grand time doing it, I have to admit. And so, you know, I don't know. There's something going on like that because I got the Lariat Award, you know, from the Will Rogers Medallion, which was their Life Achievement Award. I just got, a Life Achievement Award from at BoucherCon, which was in New Orleans from the Mystery Writers of America. And just came to find out that I guess I'm the 27, Lifetime Achievement Award winner for the Left Coast Crime, which will be coming up in Santa Fe here. I think not next year, but the year after that, I believe.
2027.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what to make of all of these Life Achievement Awards. You know, being as young as I am, I'm wondering if they're trying to write me off a little early here or something. I don't know. I'll take the award. I'm not proud, you know.
Oh, it's so funny. So right now, the next, I don't know, few minutes or so, we're going to want to get to kind of know Craig. So, Henry, I know you must have one or two fascinating questions for Craig. Go to it.
Okay. Well, now, I understand that when Perry Mason became a big hit on TV, Earl Stanley Gardner varied his description of Perry and Della Street to sound more like Raymond Burr and Barbara Hale. Did the TV version of Longmire affect how you write your novels at all?
Not really, to be honest. I've used this quote before actually on this show. One of my favorites is from Wallace Stegner on Writing and Teaching Fiction, where he says, the greatest piece of fiction ever written is the disclaimer at the beginning of every book that says nobody in this book is based off anybody alive or dead. And what a crock that is, like that. And so, you know, the majority of the characters that are in my books, if not all of them, are based off of, you know, friends, family, people that I work with. And, you know, for me, that's a lot easier like that because I've known those people my whole life. I had written the books, you know, I think it was book number 8 was on the shelves by the time the TV show started filming like that. And so I had already pretty much cemented those characters in my mind after 8 years like that. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, you can look at the characters and they do a marvelous job. Don't get me wrong like that. But it would be very hard, you know, for any actor to supplant my father, who is the basis for Lucian Connolly, Walt's, you know, old mentor and previous sheriff of Absaroka County. I never have to look, you know, for what it is that my father would have said. I never have to look for what it is that he would have done in any given situation. And so it's kind of hard to trade that in, you know, for an actor who you really don't know. All you know them is like it's almost a secondary source because they're not the character. I mean, they're portraying a character, and what you get then would be a secondary form of a secondary form like that. And so I think I'd much rather go to the source, like that, you know, right. Try and get it, you know, from the stream itself.
Sure.
Yeah. Henry, do you have another question?
Okay, sure. a little ways into the book, I kind of felt that I could probably get a job at a post office. Frozen? I'm sorry? Well,
No, you're good. We're good. Everybody's moving. Yeah.
Okay, fine. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was just saying by the time I was a short way into the book, I thought I was ready to apply for a job at a post office. I was getting a very good sense of the kind of rural delivery thing. I was wondering, did you know about that ahead of time? Did mailmen inspire you to write this? How did this all come about?
Yeah. Craig, did you hear Henry's question?
No, I didn't. I heard him start the question, but then I didn't get to hear it. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying that your details about the whole post office job were so specific. I was wondering, were you inspired by like observing mailmen, or did you have this idea and then become a secret mailman? What was the connection there?
You know, like one of the dirty little secrets about all of my books is that they're all based off of newspaper articles. And there was a newspaper article about this woman that had the longest postal route in the United States. And here in Wyoming, like, and she drives over 300 miles a day. And I just thought, you know, of course, with the nefarious mind of the crime fiction writer, the first thing I thought was, you know, if she went missing, where would you look for her, for goodness sake? Right. And so that got me started on that idea like that. And so then, you know, that's the great thing about being a writer is that you get to go ask people, you know, questions about themselves, like, tell me about what you do. And people are very open to the idea of telling you about what it is that they do. And, you know, the Postal Service, like, it is like an amazing mechanism in this country, but we don't know a whole lot, to be honest, about, you know, the mechanics of how it is that it works. Like, and so I thought, well, this is a great opportunity to go find some of this stuff out. So it kind of leads Walt on the way to, I think it's his second undercover operation, something that Walt is not particularly good at. And so, you know, I thought it would be interesting, like, to find out the machinations, you know, of our postal service and how it is sort of works, like, and the history of it and all of it like that. And I knew it would be interesting once I got involved with it like that. And it didn't let me down, at all. And yeah. I had a blast writing it, I have to admit.
Yeah. I have a question, not yet about the book, but on your website, starting tomorrow, you are just going from bookstore to library to bookstore right up to December 21st. You have a really fun event tomorrow night, a Flappers fundraiser for a local library. Do you have like a really interesting book story, you know, something that's happened to you when you're out there, either on your way to a signing or something at a signing, some fun little, you know, story?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, and the events that you're referring to, like that, you know, what happened was I had a short story. There was a I think it was called the Cowboys and Indians Magazine Tony Hillerman Mystery Short Story Contest. I think that a lot of the submissions were not as long as the title of the contest, to be honest. And what happened was, is they, I entered a short story, you know, and it must have been a weak year, and it actually won. Old Indian trick like that. And I didn't realize what kind of trouble I was making for myself until the next year, because what I did was, is I sent it out on Christmas morning to everybody that was on my, you know, list for my website, craigallenjohnson.com like that. And, at that point in time, there were only about 2,000 or 3,000 people on that list. And that was back in the day when you had to manually type in, you know, the addresses like that for emails, like that. They didn't have like cut and paste stuff that they do now. And so I typed in like about 2,000 or 3,000 emails during the course of Christmas Eve night, and finally crashed and went to bed and sent that little short story out to everybody. And my wife, of course, got up the next morning a little early to get started cooking. And I was still in bed because I didn't get in bed till like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And she turns on the computer, and all of a sudden the screen starts flowing down with all of these names, people responding, you know, to the short story. And she calls up to me in the bedroom. She's like, "What did you do?" And I had to come clean, you know, and tell her like that. And it turned out that it was, you know, a real big success. You know, everybody really enjoyed the fact that, you know, they were getting something for free, you know, on Christmas Eve, that I, or Christmas Day, that I really cared enough about them that I was, you know, wanting to just give them something in thanks. And I didn't realize how much trouble I was making for myself until Christmas started rolling around the next year. And everybody started asking me, "Okay, well, when do we get the Christmas story this year?" And I was like, "I haven't written one." Like, and so I had to sit down really quick and write another Christmas story, which I did. Like that, and it kind of became tradition over the years to do it every year. And when I got about 13 or 14 of them done, I approached Viking Penguin and said, "Hey, do you guys want to do an anthology of Christmas stories, holiday stories with Walt Longmire?" And I don't think they were overly enthusiastic. You know, they weren't excited about the idea of an anthology of short stories, you know, from a cowboy author from a town of 25. But they did it anyway, bless their hearts. They did it, and it made it on the New York Times bestsellers list like that. And so I've been writing them ever since, you know, one every year. And as a matter of fact, there's going to be another collection and another anthology of those short stories like that that'll be coming out in November called, let's see, it's Stay Calm, Have Courage, and Wait for Signs. It's called Have Courage. And
so I think, Craig, we might have just lost Craig for a moment. So, Henry, have you signed up on his website yet to get the story on Christmas Day?
Yes, I have. I'm on his email list, so I was very excited to get a notification that that story is coming.
That's great. I know. And I think it's called, I think we know the name of it. Let me see. Oh, Sense of the Season. And he's been using like a skunk sort of standing up, you know, to promote it. And Craig is back. We've just been talking, making sure that, Henry, we're on that list to get that story on Christmas morning.
I promise it's a good one.
So since we were talking go ahead.
I just want to ask you just a couple quick questions. First one, the Wyoming Tourism Bureau, they must be sending you envelopes of money every week. You better be the greatest spokesman for Wyoming in the country.
Free beer.
They're very, very appreciative of my efforts on their behalf. It was funny though, because I had lunch, you know, with the Office of Tourism, and I, you know, they were very wonderful. Took me out to lunch, and they said, "We just want to tell you how much we love your books." And I don't ever let anybody get away with just saying that. Oh, and I always ask them why. You know, I always want to know why it is. Like, and so they said, because you use actual locations. I mean, you use the roads, you use the trails, you use quad sheets. Everything in your books, you know, is exact. It's not like you're making things up, you know, other than the fictitious county that Walt happens, you know, to be, you know, the sheriff of. Everything, like, and even it uses like the actual roads and geographic locations that are in Johnson and Sheridan County like that, and kind of squeezed in between. But, you know, that's kind of the challenge for me. And one of the joys of it, like that, is that, you know, you're using a reality to build this world like it. And then the other one is I always fall back, you know, on the old Mark Twainism. The truth is always the easiest to remember, you know. And so you get too carried away with your own machinations, you know, and trying to build a world and all that kind of stuff. You're going to mess up and, you know, skip some things or get something wrong. Whereas, you know, if you open up a big map of Wyoming and know, okay, yeah, Trail 331, like it hooks up to 411 here. You know, that makes sense. Like it, so it's a lot easier that way.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about Christmas, 'tis the season for book gift giving. We're going to step away for just a moment to tell you about one of the places you can order the books of many of our author guests, including tonight's featured guests, Henry Park and Craig Johnson. Find their books on the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org.
Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking Henry C. Park and Craig Johnson. And we're having a great time.
So fun.
Craig, did you want to read anything?
I can, if you'd like.
Yeah.
If you'd like.
We would love you to read.
I can give you a little bit here from the very beginning of Return to Sender. Which, like I said, you know, is based off of like an actual case. Where this, she never went missing, thank goodness. Nothing horrible ever happened to her like that. But once I settled on that area of the Red Desert, you know, that Jim was actually speaking of earlier, like that, I knew, you know, it was interesting like that because I was down there doing research and I'm a firm believer there are a couple of different ways to do research. You know, one of those ways is the best way is by walking, you know, by walking in an area. You see more walking than you do in any other form of conveyance. Next is on horseback. You know, if you're on a horse, you see and you notice things you don't notice any other time like that. Then, you know, probably a motorcycle like that because you're out there hanging in the wind without you know, air conditioning and music and sealed up in a steel box with windows like that. And then probably a vehicle like that, you know, and then, you know, then at home doing a research on the internet like that. But I have to admit like that, that I was down there, you know, riding around in the Red Desert, doing a lot of research and everything. And there's a great little place called Mitch's Cafe in Farson. And I stopped in over there like that to get something for breakfast one morning like that. And I stopped in and the waitress came out and she looked at me and she goes, "Are you Craig Johnson?" Like that. And I said, "Yes, ma'am." Like that. And she says, "You're the one that writes the Longmire books." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I do." Like that. And she goes, "What are you doing down here in the Red Desert?" And I said, "Well, I've got a book that takes place, you know, out there." And she goes, "In the desert?" And I said, "Yeah." And she paused for a moment. And she goes, "Be careful. A lot of strange things happen out there." And I was like, "Oh, here's the book. That's it. You know, I'm done now. Like, I can really get going on." So, are you guys ready?
We're ready.
Okay. Nobody smiles anymore. Excuse me? Have you noticed? Nobody smiles anymore. Mike adjusted himself in the tiny postal Jeep, setting his back against the passenger side door as he sat on the floor beside Dog so no one would see him in the September early morning light. Remember when you were growing up? How you were taught that when you walked down the street and you met a stranger that you smiled or you said hello. He sighed, staring at the plethora of mail and packages in the back as if it were a weight he could no longer bear. People don't do that anymore. Mike Thurman, my late wife's cousin, was in a bad mood, but that didn't mean that he didn't have a point. Mike had been having a tough month, so I tried to distract him with just a bit, thinking of something to say while surveying the interior of the utility vehicle. "So why do they call this model Jeep a DJ?" He grunted, swiping off his Seattle Mariners ball cap and rubbing his shaved head, then reaching over and scruffing the fur behind sleeping Dog's ear. "Dispatch Jeep." "Oh. Also, they're two-wheel drive. Smart for Wyoming in the winter, huh?" Was she driving one of these? "Nah, there's no way you could fit all that mail on a 307-mile route in something like this. She had a hopped-up 68 travel all that she drove." He shook his head, putting his cap back on, folding his hands in his lap. "She probably used up her entire paycheck putting gas in the thing." He nodded to the right, turquoise and white with all those hippie stickers in the back window. "I think it was an old ambulance." Or what? "A hearse." Neither of us wanted to dwell on that. "I think it's for sale at the used car lot about a quarter of a mile down the main drag on Foothill Boulevard. That piece of shit boyfriend of hers, Benny, sold all of her stuff about a month after that she went missing. Don't you have to wait 60 days? His name was on the title. Sweetwater County processed the vehicle. He studied me with a raised eyebrow. "I'm a postal inspector, not a criminal investigator." I glanced down at the heavy file folder in my hands. "Geez, Mike, haven't you seen those TV shows? Anybody can do this stuff."
That's great.
Very nice.
Well, when I was saying earlier that as readers, and we love this series, but as readers, I was like, okay, here it is, Return to Sender. And I started reading, and I thought, this is kind of crazy for Walt. This is kind of crazy. And then I said to Jim, have you gotten very far? It isn't kind of crazy. And I emailed Henry and I said, Henry, is this a kind of a little crazy? And we all said, this is crazy. Yeah. And it is so great.
Well, Walt gets kind of pulled into an odd world, you know, of abductions and cult figures and all this kind of stuff. Like that, which is, you know, I mean, what is it they say, like that nature hates a vacuum, like that, you know, and boy, the Red Desert is a very large vacuum, so a lot of strange, you know, kind of flows into that area, you know, to a great extent. But yeah, that's kind of one of the challenges, like that, because that was, I think, the 21st book in the series, 21st or 22nd book in the series.
21st.
And
21st.
So, yeah. And so, you know, it's always going to be a challenge like that. That's kind of, I'll be honest with you. I mean, that's the part that worried me the most whenever Viking Penguin turned in The Cold Dish, that very first standalone novel with Walt in it. And they said, you know, boy, we really like these characters. We really like this world. And I said, boy, I'm glad you do, because if you're going to publish it, you should like it. And they said, well, we think you don't understand what it is we're saying. Like, and I said, maybe not. What are you saying? And they said, well, we just feel like these characters in this place, there's a lot more to this world. And we think that you should take advantage of that and maybe, you know, write some more books about these characters. Like that. And that's when I, of course, you know, with all the knowledge of having not even having had one book, you know, published yet, said, you know, yeah, I don't think that's a really good idea. I don't know how many people you can kill in the least populated county, in the least populated state, you know, before things are going to get stupid. And they said, well, we trust that you'll find a way around that, Craig. And so they dumped that right back in my lap, like that, as it were, like that. And yeah. I don't know. One of the things that I decided to do was to kind of, you know, make that a little bit more believable, was to have the books be kind of home and away. There would be one book that would take place within Absaroka County, and then there would be another, you know, another case and another book that would take place outside of there. Like, it's kind of like spread his, you know, his wings over, you know, I mean, my gosh, there was one book that took place in Philadelphia. There was one book that half of it took place in Vietnam in 1968. There was one book that took place up in Alaska, you know, one up in Montana, one over in South Dakota. And so, you know, it's not that unbelievable simply because if Walt is that good, if he is that good of a world-class detective, then his abilities would be in demand. You can't hire him, but you can, you know, maybe try and coerce him with, you know, the curiosity of a case, you know, and also if it's in, you know, within his bailiwick, you know, if it's in his wheelhouse, like that, then it's a possibility you could get him involved with it. And that, you know, kind of led me to that home and away. So Walt kind of became a ball team at that point in time, you know, where he would play home and then he would play away. And so, you know, I wanted to be careful about bringing up baseball around Henry, since the Dodgers, you know, just won the figure, you know, that wound is probably healed by now and it's probably okay.
Jim, did you have a question? I have a few. I've been
just following us with the Dodgers and everything. Where are we going on this one? You know, I just want to quickly say, you have so many themes going on in this book. It was a little tough for me to keep up with it first. We got Blair, which is really our key lady who's missing, and we're trying to solve this problem. But we have the Order of the Red Gate. He's a full-blown cult. We have a Russian connection, so something's going to happen in the next book, I'm sure.
Yep.
We have a lady, it's another lady that's missing, but we don't know where she is.
Ruth Wenhart.
We have alien abductions in the 50s. We have this desert where there's nothing but sand and sand dunes in southern Wyoming, and all the scripture. How did you even get the scripture in there?
And then you know, my grandfather was a Baptist preacher. And so, you know, you got a little bit of Bible, whether you wanted it or not. And I always looked at it as a really magnificent, you know, piece of historical document, for goodness sake. Like, and then, of course, you know, I mean, you go through and you find quotes everywhere, you know, and my goodness, I already used one from Mark Twain, right? Like that. So, I mean, whenever you see a good quote, chances are it's one of two. It's either Mark Twain or the Bible, you know, one of the two. It's always easy to fall back on that. And then also when you're dealing with a religious cult, you know, you're probably going to have to sidle up to the Bible every once in a while like that, you know, and get some, you know, get, you know, a little bit of that liturgy in there. Like that. And so it's a little bit of a challenge like that, but a joy to do too. I mean, and I like the fact that, you know, you see that there are a lot of different layers, you know, to the books. I mean, I would get really tired of a book that only had just a whodunit mechanics to hold your attention, you know, for the better part of a year. You know, I'm always saying to people like that, you know, well, look, you buy my book, and you're going to spend a couple of days with it or a week or so or whatever. I'm working on that book for the better part of a year. And so it better hold my attention, you know, for the entirety of a year like that. Can you think of a worse situation than, you know, starting on a project that's going to take you a year and getting about 6 months in and then all of a sudden you don't want to do it anymore? Like, you know, that would be horrible.
But so, the challenge is that the readers read it in like 6 hours and then we want the next book. Wondering how come the next book isn't already ready, right?
I love that, like that. But then again, you know what the you know what the music to an author's ears is? I went back and reread your book.
Reread it.
You know, I mean, there are a lot of people that read just for the plot points, you know, and just want to get through and hear the story. And then when they get finished up, look at, they're like, you know what? I think I missed a lot though along the way.
Yes.
Yeah. And this I'd like to go back and go through that just one more time. There are people that write me that read all 20 books before they read the 21st book. Every year they will go back, you know, and I'm looking at them and I'm going, you know, that was pretty easy when there were only three or four like that. But now they're going to pick up on 25 books. That's going to be an awful lot of pre-reading before you sit down and read my newest one. So
I have a question for Henry. Okay. Because did you feel, Henry, as a reader, that there was cinematography going on that landscape? And that scene with Longmire going across that desert, and he's got two hanger-ons. I could hear like John Williams composing like a theme music, and as they go across that desert, didn't you feel that way, Henry?
Yeah, I could see the movie. Actually, what I really loved about that whole sequence, and I know it comes late in the story, so I don't want to talk too much of the specifics of it. But it was such fun to read. It's so rare that you get to read a scene where you say, I haven't read this before. This isn't a variation on something I've read or seen before.
Thank you.
This whole book. We've never seen this. Never read this book before.
That could be good or bad, though. I don't know. Like, you know, it could go either way.
It was good. It was good. Because I didn't know where it was going, and yet where it went made sense.
Thank you.
I enjoyed so much, this sounds weird to get nostalgic about like bad television and cults and things like that, but I loved Mysteries from Beyond, the series, and the sort of Heaven's Gate, Jonestown feel of some of the stuff that was going on. It brought back stuff that wasn't good, but it was something that we all sort of lived through, and you get oddly nostalgic about it. I'm glad that your cult members are a bunch of old hippies, because they think, are they out there? Do we have those kind of people in the desert now?
Oh, yes. Traveling in very specific buses. There's a whole subculture like that. And what they do is they buy old school buses and, you know, completely rebuild them like that, you know. And I don't know if it's just the challenge of building them themselves or the savings, you know, of not, you know, going out into trying to buy a $150,000 RV, you know, or something like that. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, but it's a subculture that's out there. Yeah, very much so. Thank you very much for that, like that, because that's, you know, whenever I'm teaching a class, whenever I'm teaching a writing class, I'll always tell students, if you write something and you think it sounds like something that you've read before, you have. Go get rid of it and go back and start again like that, because, you know, you're just regurgitating some of that same stuff, those tropes that we've seen so many times before. And you can get away with that a little bit, but you better be a really good writer and, you know, and write it in a way that nobody's ever written it before. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the challenge, like, at to see, you know, well, where would this not go? Well, you know, where has this not been, you know, done before? And, What would be the thing that would happen at this point in time? It's kind of like, you know, what you were saying, Jim, as far as locking bumpers with the International and the Bluebird bus. You know, what's the worst thing that could happen? Well, okay, let's just have that happen, you know, for goodness sake.
Well, the cast of characters we've written, we were keeping a list as we were going through. And, you know, one of them that surprised us and we just found so kind of charming in her own way was Mrs. Wasserstein.
Yes, absolutely.
What a surprise she was.
Yes, she was. She was.
You always enjoy having characters that people won't suspect, you know, will come through in the crucial moment and then do. You know, but then when you hear her background and you hear, you know, what she came from and what she survived and all of these things like that, then it's totally believable, you know, that she would come through at that moment. You know, there's no doubt.
Yeah, yeah, actually, she's a little dangerous, you know. So
she is. Like, you know, we don't know what the body count is for her. We don't want to know in many ways.
So. We're having so much fun that we're going to skip our little Out West Shop ad and just tell you that this show is partly sponsored by Jim and me and our business, outwestshop.com. But we're not going to go there because we only have about 5 minutes left and the time is ticking. So, Henry, do you have another question about this book or a character or a thought?
Well, it's not one that I was planning on, but Craig, you got me very intrigued. I was wondering, who was the first author that you found yourself rereading their books?
John Steinbeck. I remember reading the Red Pony and then graduating from the Red Pony, you know, to Cannery Row and, you know, and then moving on up, you know, into Grapes of Wrath and East of Eden. And, you know, I mean, I read every single thing he ever wrote. And you were interesting enough, like, that you should bring that up as far, you know, Bobby Jean, as far as, like, the cinematic, you know, quality. I think that if John Steinbeck wrote a grocery list, they tried to make a movie out of it, for goodness sake. Like, you know, he had that ability, like, mm-hmm. you know, to make you see so much of what it is that he wanted you to see and conveying so much. But yeah, and then the social aspect of his work, you know, his ability to like take on those really epic, you know, social problems like that, you know, and have characters that were so spectacular. I mean, they held your interest, you know, all the way through from the beginning to the very end, you know, any of those books. Like it, and also the humor that was in his books. There was always sublime, kind humor. In his books. It wasn't a mean-spirited humor like that. It made you feel good, you know, about being a human being, you know, when you read John Steinbeck.
Okay, gentlemen, I'm looking at the time. So, Henry, where can we find you, follow you? What's next? Tell us all that good stuff.
Okay. Where you can find me, of course, at True West Magazine, Henry's Western Roundup. The blog, and as I say, there's a lot in the Facebook page. I'm in True West every issue, and you can find lots and lots of my stuff at the INSP channel's blog, and you can leave me messages in many of those places if you want.
Okay, Craig, what's next, and where do we find you, and where do we sign up for your Christmas card?
Well, it's very simple. You just go to CraigAllenJohnson.com and sign up for the newsletter. Like, and I send you an email once every 4 months or so. And then on Christmas morning, you'll wake up and it'll be in your inbox. And I've got about 12, I think, library events here in the state of Montana, in the state of Wyoming and Montana. And I'll be reading, you know, this year's Christmas short story in all of those. Like, and then, of course, that second anthology of those short stories will be out with Viking Penguin in November. And then, of course, there's also the new book that'll come out May 26th. Like, it's called The Brothers McKay, which is, believe it or not, a revisionist retelling of the Brothers Karamazov in Wyoming.
So will you come back in like June, or come that schedule, since the 26th, you'll be really busy. So maybe because we would want Henry. So maybe it'll have to be July.
Well, we'll figure it out one way or another.
We would love to have you back, of course, Greg. And Jim has a quote.
Yeah, there's quotes all through the book. Oh, you know, I had a tough time figuring something out. And, you know, one was better than the next.
These are all pages that we marked the things that we read aloud to each other.
Oh, you know, bless your hearts. Thank you.
You know, Altmaier is going through the desert, you know, and as you said, you had These are the tallest sand dunes in the United States. They're in this desert in the southern part. Salt and crusted sweat on my clothes chafed against me like 500 grit sandpaper, alternating between damp and dry as a bone. And I was pretty sure I was hardening up out in the desert. Maybe that was the way they'd find me, standing out here like a statue with two corpses attached to me.
We are delighted that you were all with us. Happy holidays to the both of you. Join us next week with Lori Buchanan, and we'll be talking about book number 5 in her Sean McPherson series, The Illusionist. I already am not sleeping. I can't put it down. We will say happy holidays, and thank you so much, gentlemen.
And thank you. Craig, thank you.
We'll see you both in 2026.
Absolutely. Yeah. Looking forward to it. You guys have a happy holiday.
Very happy holidays, everybody.